is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
My motivation all comes from my experience as a student athlete. Like I referenced earlier, I had an unbelievable experience, and that's my central goal for everyone who comes through our program, is to leave here in 4 years and feel that same rewarding experience and garner the same growth and benefits from being a student athlete in this environment.
Luke Flacherzi is the head men's basketball coach at the University of Rochester, where he has guided the Yellow Jackets to 2 UAA championships in 2011 and 2013, and has made the NCAA Division III tournament 6 times. Flacherzi has amassed more than 200 wins during his tenure at Rochester. Luke was previously the head coach at Skidmore College for 3 seasons from 2007 to 2010. Prior to Skidmore, he served as an assistant coach at Amherst College, Sewanee, the University of the South, and at Rochester. Flacherzi played his college basketball at Grinnell College in Iowa.
Hey Hoopheads, this April our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering a huge $3,000 discount with a trade-in of any model in any condition. And they'll knock off $3,000 when you trade in one of their competitors' machines too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Corey Heights from Prep Athletics, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Be prepared to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Luke Flacherzi, head men's basketball coach at the University of Rochester. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this morning, but I am pleased to be joined by Luke Flacherzi, head men's basketball coach at the University of Rochester. Luke, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on and definitely looking forward to diving into all the things that you've been able to do in your career. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid. Tell me a little bit about some of your first experiences with the game of basketball, what you remember from when you were younger.
Yeah, I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah, and was a huge Utah Jazz fan. I'm old enough, though. It was pre-Stockton and Malone, so it was Frank Layden and Ricky Green and Thurl Big T Bailey, and kind of grew up playing junior jazz when I was in elementary school, and just kind of fell in love with the game at that time, and it's never left.
Good time to be watching Utah Jazz basketball. Thurl Bailey, I had a chance to meet him one time at a junior NBA event. Super nice guy, and he told me a funny story about the year that they went to the finals in 83 with Jim Valvano and that whole group, and how Valvano kind of tricked them into saying that basically got them all fired up when they were playing before they played the Phi Slamma Jamma, Akeem, Drexler, the Houston Rockets team. So it was a good story. So I really liked Thurl Bailey the one time I met him. So fun guy to grow up, I'm sure, to root for as you were growing up.
Well, my assistant, Aaron Toomey, is a big NC State fan. So he certainly is glad we're talking about NC State basketball.
There you go. So as you get into the game and you get a little bit older, what do you remember about some of the experiences that you had as a high school player?
I think just sports in general, it was my passion. I was fortunate to play 4 sports in high school, and basketball was always kind of what I was most drawn to and most excited about and kind of had the most passion for. But just kind of learning who I was as a person and how much I enjoyed competing and working hard for success, and I think it really has just, it's taken me to some great places and just enjoy that aspect of sports and basketball in particular.
How do you think about being a multi-sport athlete, both for yourself as a kid growing up and maybe the benefits that you felt you got from it? And then obviously as a college coach, you're having the opportunity as you recruit to look at, is this guy a one sport athlete? Is this guy a multi-sport athlete? And just maybe some of your experiences on the coaching side of it.
Yeah, I think I'm probably in the minority here where I'm not a big fan of specialization. Like I love, you know, guys having other interests and whether it be sports or otherwise. I just think being a well-rounded athlete, well-rounded person only benefits you in life. So I certainly reap some of the rewards of learning from other coaches, other sports, other perspectives. And I think when you get so entrenched in one lane, you know, it takes away from some other growth opportunities and honestly creates a lot of burnout, in my opinion. But I know with AAU basketball and the year-round circuit and, you know, how competitive it is to become a college basketball player and how much is on the line, like I understand it. But, you know, anytime we have a prospective student come through and, you know, say they have an interest in playing another sport, you know, I get excited. You know, some of my favorite athletes I've coached over my years have been the multi-sport guys. And I would love to see us hold on to a little bit of that at least.
How does that differing interest fit into your experience there at Rochester? Because I know one of the things, Luke, when we've talked to coaches at all different levels, and I know one of the things that Division III coaches often mention is just the fact that basketball is really important to their guys, and yet the Division III basketball experience affords them the ability to be out on campus and get involved in some things that they might have interest in outside of the game. So just maybe talk a little bit about how that particular perspective plays out in your program.
Yeah, I mean, being in the elite academic environment that we're in such a strong academic school, you know, there's no doubt in our program, their academic pursuits are paramount. You know, first, second, and third, that's what they're here for. It's why they chose Rochester, and we do everything we can to support them as students at the highest level and reach their goals. You know, our basketball program has been very successful. So we always say like a very close secondary pursuit is basketball. And so I think what's different at a school like this, you know, we're playing at an extremely high level of basketball, but in addition to school and basketball, I want our guys to have an experience outside of just those two things. I want them to be involved in different things on campus. And if they tell me it's important to them, I want to do everything I can to help support them pursuing those things outside of the classroom and off the court. And so, again, some of my favorite student athletes we've had over the years are the ones who are completely entrenched in campus and involved in numerous things all at the same time and doing that juggling act that is so much of the college experience and what they're getting out of it as a reward.
Yeah, it's so interesting how different that experience can be at the Division I, Division II, Division III level. And in terms of especially thinking about the amount of access that you as a coaching staff have to your players in the offseason, whereas now in Division III, you guys are picking up those 8 days, which I know lots of coaches are excited about, where you're going from zero days of off-season contact on the floor to going to eight. And you compare and contrast that with the Division I experience where, you know, a lot of those guys are on campus 50 weeks a year. And I don't know, I always look back at my experience as a player and think, man, that would be an awful lot of listening to the same people chirping my ear as a player. And then the same thing from a coaching standpoint, just feels like you might need a little bit of a break. So there's probably a happy medium in there somewhere.
I think the 8 days is spot on. I think it's perfect. I think as a winter sport, we were really missing some connectivity early in the school year with most notably our incoming first year students, you know, not being able to get on the court with them until October 15th and kind of having them, you know, out in the wild for the first 6 weeks without kind of that structure and support system, I think was doing them a disservice. And so, you know, it's not like we're going to have crazy intense practices or anything like that, but it gives us a touch point to really touch base with our guys and you know, get them, you know, on the right track, so to speak, at the beginning of the school year and not have to wait until the winter season. And then really for me, I know we will use a few of our days to do some postseason work. And so one of the, I think, frustrating elements is, you know, we have our postseason meetings with our guys and inevitably everyone wants a little bit more. And so they start to talk about you know, what do you need to work on to get better? And like, what are your areas that you're targeting to improve, you know, based on your experience this year? And so we used to just be left to talk to them about it, but now hopefully we can get on the court with them a couple times and say, all right, this is how we're going to, you know, develop our left hand. And, you know, this is how you can spend some time working on your ball screen reads. And so I do think from a developmental standpoint, it's going to be very beneficial for our student athletes.
Yeah, I could see that being a really huge development in terms of being able to put some actions to words, and instead of just sending a kid out saying, okay, here's in the summertime, here's what we want you to work on. Now you can actually put them through that on the floor, give them some ideas of what they can work on when they're on their own, or if guys are working with trainers or whatever their system is for getting better. I can definitely see the benefit to being able to use some of those days at the end of the season to be able to have contact with. And then obviously, as you mentioned, when you have those incoming players who are first year and get on campus, and again, not that they're not choosing your school for academics, but obviously, as you said, basketball is a very close second. So to not be able to have those touch points, I know from talking to other coaches that that's always been something that's been challenging to try to get those kids acclimated and make sure they're ready to go on October 15th for the first day of practice. So it's definitely something that I think has been needed. And I'm glad to hear that you found it to be a benefit, or you're going to find it to be beneficial as you move forward. When you think back to the beginning of your coaching career, when did coaching get on your radar? When was it something that you started to look at and say, hey, I think this is something that I want to pursue for my career? Was it still while you were playing? And I know you had an opportunity to play at Grinnell in Iowa. And so was it at a time where your career ends and you're like, oh, I got to get into coaching now because the game is, my time as a player is over? Or was it something you kind of always had in the back of your mind?
Yeah, I kind of backdoored my way into it. I certainly wasn't speaking it out or setting out to be a coach. I didn't come from a coaching family. I didn't have a great kind of background in coaching and kind of aspired to it early. I actually was left at the end of my college career trying to figure out what I wanted to do exactly. I had a great connection with our athletic director at Grinnell College, Diane Fairchild, and I thought what she did was really cool. Back then it was kind of being an athletic director was being a coach of coaches, and doing it in a small liberal arts college environment sounded really appealing to me. And so I pursued graduate school for sport management to kind of go down that path. And just kind of a quick story to show you how small the coaching world is. My coach at Grinnell College played at Colby College in the mid 70s, and he played against David Hickson, who was the head coach at Amherst College. And so when I went out to graduate school at the University of Massachusetts Amherst for sports management, you know, my college coach knew best, and he kind of said, hey, you know, you're going to be out there anyways. I know Coach Hickson from my playing days. Why don't you see if you can just go over and volunteer and help out? And that was kind of the seed that needed to be planted. And Coach Hickson was very gracious to include me in the program at Amherst, and kind of the rest was history almost. You know, I immediately found the kind of value and joy in impacting student athletes' lives in a positive fashion, both on the court and just on a personal level. And, you know, halfway through that graduate year of helping out the program at Amherst, I just, I was really, really becoming more and more drawn to coaching as a profession. And so wasn't completely ready to give up on my aspirations to be an athletic director. And so at the Division III level, it used to be much more commonplace that there were two paths. You could either coach your way there and kind of pick up administration as you went, and or just do the administrative route. And so I kind of by the month almost kind of started to, you know, head more and more down the coaching path. And, you know, now here I am. 20 plus years later, just, you know, really enjoying coaching and not really focused on that administrative route anymore.
When you think back to that first experience as a coach, was there anything that was surprising to you in terms of coaching, something that you liked about it that maybe you were surprised, considering that you hadn't spent much time thinking about being a coach prior to that?
Yeah, no, it was two of my student athletes in particular, John Donovan, Adam Harper, still very close to them. They just kind of latched on right away. They wanted my perspective. They wanted to work out. They wanted my take on something on a personal level. They wanted my thoughts on the game plan. They wanted feedback when they got off the court. And, you know, they just really were almost all in before I even really earned their trust and showed, you know, the credibility. So it was just the thought and the fact that I could have an impact on them in a positive way. I started to wrap my head around kind of what made my athletic experience so special. You know, I think back to my time at Grinnell College, and it's a great school, and I learned a ton in the classroom, but the things that I really value most were things I learned on the court. And so I had an amazing experience as a student athlete in that environment. And so the easiest way to say it is I just kind of felt a desire and passion to help others have that same rewarding and positive experience through athletics in that high academic environment. And, you know, kind of, to use the analogy again, the seed was planted and it's just continued to grow ever since. And that's kind of at the core of why I coach, and my biggest goal, as a coach is to help my student athletes have that rewarding experience.
Talk a little about your experiences as an assistant coach, your different stops, and what you learned along the way that you felt helped prepare you when you eventually got your first head coaching job at Skidmore.
Yeah, no, I mean, I always use the word privileged because I think back to it, and I just told you kind of the happenstance and how I got into coaching in the first place. But I had the opportunity to work with two of the best Division III coaches to ever do it. Dave Hickson, actually, in very exciting news, I'm not sure if you've seen, but he's going to be inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's awesome.
As the first Division III head coach ever, kind of a Division III lifer. And so to see that kind of resume get rewarded, it just gives credibility to kind of what I'm doing, what all of us are doing at the Division III level, and how we're impacting student athletes. And so, you know, he was at Amherst College for 45 plus years. He's won over 800 games, one of the most successful coaches to ever do it. And so easily my biggest mentor. But when I left Amherst, I came to the University of Rochester as an assistant coach and got to work with Mike Neer, who, another 30 plus year veteran at the same school, unbelievable kind of achievements, four Final Fours at this level. So I think if you talk to anyone in the Division III landscape, they'll tell you they're two of the best to ever do it. And for me to be able to work with both of them and have those that varied experience was really special. And so I think the biggest takeaway for me was that they were so different, and they approached it so differently. They had such different personalities. Their focuses were so different as well, that it showed me that, you know, there's so many ways to be successful, and just really kind of gave me the confidence to zero in on doing it the way that was best for me, that was true to my personality, and, you know, gave me the confidence that I would be successful doing it that way as well. So, but, you know, so many little things to take away from every coach I worked with, for sure.
When did you start to get a feel for the way that you wanted to play? So in other words, as an assistant coach, were you already starting to kind of put together, okay, I'm going to take this piece from this person, this piece from this person, and obviously you're putting in your own opinions. And obviously as an assistant, you're always thinking, okay, here's a situation. Here's how my head coach handled it. Maybe how would I have handled it differently? When did you feel like you had a real firm grasp on your philosophy? Was that before you got the job at Skidmore, or was that somewhere through that tenure, or was it not till you got to Rochester? When did you really feel like you had a grasp on what you wanted to do?
Yeah, no. So whenever I'm asked to be on a podcast like this, it gives me an excuse to go and listen to some. And so you do a great job, you know, and it's really some good work you do here. And I went back and listened to my guy, Taylor Roth. And so he talked about kind of the value of his diversity of experience and, you know, being at five different stops and how he kind of was able to take a little bit from each stop and make it his own. I think that's just true of coaching in general. You know, I think I still at this stage, having coached college basketball for 20 plus years, and I'm still a work in progress. I'm still, you know, kind of taking pieces I like and ditching pieces I don't. And so that's what I tell my assistants. That's what I try to live by as well. And I did at each stop along the way. It's like, you know, you got to have a perspective that, you know, this is your own program, and What are the aspects that you like that we're doing here that you're going to carry forward? And what are the parts that you don't like, that you're kind of leave behind? And how do you make it your own? And so I think that process started pretty much for me, as soon as I started coaching. And I really like this aspect of the program. This is definitely going to be part of my program when I'm a head coach, and just kind of picked up those pieces as I went along. And, you know, it, like I said, it's a work in progress. I think there's things that I was really excited about in 2001 that, you know, we don't do anymore. and certainly things that I picked up new from assistants who come through the program, or things that I've learned through watching the game of basketball from other coaches. And it really is such an interesting profession. And it's just, you know, the constant kind of sharing and gathering of information. And it's really fun.
What's your biggest source of that information in terms of learning? Is it mentors? Is it other people? Is it watching film? Is it grabbing stuff from other coaches? How do you just go about, even at this stage of your career, how do you learn?
Oh, it's everything you mentioned. You know, you might be watching a game, you might be breaking down a film, you might be scouting an opponent, you might be talking X's and O's and kind of tweaking something yourself. You know, that's one of the things Coach Hickson was so good at, is like, you might bring in, you know, the Princeton offense and you'd be like, what if we did it this way? Or, you know, what if we tweaked it to fit our personnel in this fashion? And so just having those conversations, being around basketball minds, it could be, you know, one of our women's coaches. It could be anything. It could be an NABC convention. And, you know, you never know where you're going to pick up a little nugget that's going to help you be better as a coach and help your program.
When you took over at Skidmore, your first head coaching job, what do you remember about being the hardest part of making that transition from assistant to head coach?
This is an easy answer for me because it was very impactful. I had the opportunity to work at such successful programs. And so I got to Skidmore. I took over a program that was 2-22 the year before I got there. And unfortunately, we didn't have an opportunity to recruit before the next season. And so, you know, we were in it, in the trenches together with a group that hadn't had any success. And, you know, I was trying to kind of install our identity and our program and our pillars and things that I knew that were successful and would help us be successful at Skidmore. And, you know, no matter how much confidence you have, when you're not winning games in that situation, as a first year head coach, you're going to have some doubts and you know, you're going to second guess yourself. And so I was really lucky, to have such great mentors that I could reach out to and have conversations with and kind of reaffirm that what we were doing, what was good and was going to work. And so, you know, just that moment, as a young head coach, I think was really kind of something that I look back to and I was just like, wow, you know, I'm glad I had the fortitude to struggle through that and continue to kind of, grind and push forward and teach things that I know that are important to success. And fortunately I didn't have to wait long and, you know, we started to have some success, shortly and, but that doubt and that hesitation certainly crept in.
How did you put together your staff that first year?
Yeah, no, the resources at every school are different. We didn't have any full-time positions. And so I was just working with some part-time money and, you know, I did my best to kind of piece it together. And so we had a local high school coach, kind of a veteran guy, John Lee, who was a great resource for us. We had a student manager who was a great resource, and I was able to kind of piece together a student life, res life position with some of my stipend money to get someone to come join us by the name of Kieran Gordon. And so they were with me that first cycle through, and you know, it was a challenge, but we were able to put together a good staff, and they really helped build the foundation there.
After your 3 years at Skidmore, why the University of Rochester? Obviously, as an academic institution and the history of the basketball program, becomes clear that when that job opens up, I'm sure that's one that there were a lot of people that had an interest in it. So what particularly struck your interest in the University of Rochester when that job comes open?
Yeah, so before I went to Skidmore from Rochester. So I was at the U of R as an assistant coach for 1 year with Coach Neer, and you know, didn't really dream of coming back. You know, it's such a kind of premier job in the Division III world. So But fortunately, you know, 3 years later, we had just turned the corner at Skidmore, and we set the school record for wins in my third year. We made the postseason tournament, and it just was almost serendipitous, the timing of Coach Neer retiring here and the job opening up. And it was a challenging moment for me. It was a no-brainer in so many ways, but it was a really hard, difficult decision in a lot of other ways because I had worked so hard over the last 3 years to kind of build what we were doing at Skidmore and the success we were having and kind of the relationships I built with the incoming players who helped us turn it around. It was tough to leave. But at the same time, for what I do and what my passion is, the University of Rochester is a pinnacle job. I'm able to, you know, kind of impact student athletes' life at the highest level and, you know, do it in a way that I'm supported with the resources that are allow us to be successful kind of year in and year out. And so, as someone who doesn't have Division I aspirations, who, you know, wants to, be at the Division III, level, for my whole career, to be able to move to a job where I felt like, you know, we were supported the right way and we had the resources to do it every year, was important. And so I feel very fortunate that, I got the head coaching job here.
What were those conversations like with your kids at Skidmore when you leave? Because obviously you're going in their building, as you said, that first year you didn't have an opportunity to recruit. And then moving forward, you're obviously bringing in guys that you're selling them on your vision for the program there. It's something that a lot of coaches have to go through. So I think it's probably really relevant advice in terms of how did you handle those conversations with the kids that you were leaving behind at Skidmore to go and take that opportunity at Rochester?
Yeah, I think what made it easiest was, it wasn't about me. As a recruiter, I almost view myself more as a college counselor. I am maybe too altruistic in the process. I genuinely want everyone to find the right fit and be in the right place to, you know, have a positive experience and be successful. And so when you recruit that way, everyone was at Skidmore for a reason, and you know, certainly they, I'm assuming, liked me and appreciated me as a coach. But you know, ultimately, you know, that's not what I was selling, and they were at Skidmore because it was the best fit for them as a student athlete. And so, although on a personal level, I didn't want to say goodbye and it was hard, you know, they were in the right place whether or not I was there, and so I was confident that whoever Skidmore hired was going to help them continue to achieve and kind of fulfill the dreams of why they chose Skidmore. And so that put me at peace almost. And, you know, I think from a basketball standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, they're all smart, you know, guys. They got it. They understood why. And it was a sensible move for me to come back to Rochester. And I don't think any of them either at the time or do now harbor any kind of ill will. It was hard to leave because we were having so much fun together.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, as you said, that's one of the things that I hear a lot from, certainly from coaches out there, about finding the right fit. And sometimes that happens. And as you can see from the transfer portal, sometimes that doesn't happen. But clearly, I think if you can find the right fit, both as a coach and as a player, you're going to be much better off than you otherwise would be. When you get to Rochester and you start thinking about, okay, what do we have to do to continue the success that we've had in the first week or two on the job, beyond talking to the players, what did you feel like were the most important things you had to do to sort of ingrain yourself in the program and start to put your stamp on it?
Being an assistant prior certainly helped. You know, I didn't have to ask anyone how the program worked or what they were being taught. And so many of the values of the value system was the same. I think the biggest changes were just being true to myself as a coach and coming in here and not trying to run the program the way Coach Neer ran it, but run the program that, you know, I'm going to run it. And, you know, honestly, the challenges early on were the circumstance. You know, Coach Neer retired late in the spring, and so here I was 3 years later, kind of on some unsure footing in the sense that we only had, I think, 7 or 8 recruited players in the program. And so just trying to navigate how we were going to play and how we were going to try to play to our strengths with that group and how we were going to kind of manage a smaller roster was the biggest challenge. And it was one of the most special years of my life, because thinking about just the transition back and the excitement of running the program and competing in the UAA. But we had some very unexpected success that year. We ended up going 22-6 and winning the UAA in my first year back with a very small group. And it really, really made it special. And it'll certainly be one of the most fond teams I've ever had, looking back at what we were able to accomplish with that group and some really special student athletes.
You've hinted at it a little bit, but let's give you an opportunity to lay out your full answer in terms of what you love about the Division III level. As you mentioned, that's the level that you're at. It's the level that you want to be at. You don't have aspirations to move up or jump up to the Division I level. So what is it in your mind that makes Division III basketball so special that, again, causes you to feel the love that you have for it?
Yeah, I think everything's just in the right perspective and in the right place. And it's, you know, my motivation all comes from my experience as a student athlete. Like I referenced earlier, I had an unbelievable experience, and that's my central goal for everyone who comes through our program, is to leave here in 4 years and feel that same rewarding experience and garner the same growth and kind of, you know, benefits from being a student athlete in this environment. And I say perspective because it's, you know, like I referenced, I mean, this is an unbelievable university and really high level academics. And, you know, we have guys come in here and push themselves to reach their potential as a student. And it's a great environment to be in. And our athletic pursuit is such a nice complement to it. And really helps them grow. And I just think it's special. I think I've never really had the Division I experience. I'm not talking, firsthand, but I think as soon as you start to prioritize the athletic piece ahead of the academics, it muddies the water pretty quickly, and it takes away from what we're trying to accomplish. And so I think what we do is kind of the last passion of being a true student athlete. And, we work with the highest quality, highest character, people out there. The guys in our program are what make us special. And, you know, being able to work with those people on a day to day basis is so rewarding, that, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
All right. How do you find those guys? Recruiting process? What does that look like for you guys?
Yeah, so culture is the word that everyone wants to use, right? And so our biggest strength is our student athletes, our players, and, you know, part of that is the culture. And so I think the most important way we manage our culture is through the recruiting process. We target hardworking, self-motivated, driven individuals who are genuinely trying to be the best student and the best basketball player they can be, and just trying to identify good people to go along with that. And so when you get a bunch of like-minded student athletes in the same environment with the same goals, and they're able to kind of work off each other and push each other, your culture is going to be in a good place. And so, we're very fortunate. It's not something that we take for granted year in and year out. It can change. It's honestly something that as a coach, you don't have, complete grasp on the wheel, when it comes to it, because it's so much, up to your student athletes. And so, we kind of, are just benefiting and trusting that if we get the right people here who are trying to achieve the same things, and they're doing it in a very kind of positive professional way, like, we're going to be successful. And that served our program very well.
How do you identify those guys? Because obviously with the academic profile at Rochester, you can recruit guys from all over the country. So what does that look like in terms of your identification process? How do you start to narrow it down from whatever the funnel looks like at the beginning to the guys that you're actually going to bring onto campus and potentially have join your program?
For us, the kind of filters is the term I use are very straightforward at the beginning. Can you get in? Do you have the grades?
Right.
Can you afford it? Because it is going to be expensive for certain populations. And, can you help our team continue to excel? And so, you know, what level of basketball player you are. Those are the three kind of easy ones to check. And once we get past those three filters, it's much more of a fine-tooth comb where we're trying to identify, you know, the right position, the right type of person. And so that's when it gets more kind of under the magnifying glass, so to speak. And so we'll talk to high school coaches. We'll talk to AU coaches. We'll talk to former teammates. But I think the thing we rely on most is the campus visit, and we really lean on our current student athletes to spend time with prospective students, possibly an overnight visit with a prospective student. And then, I think the right word is we demand that our players give us feedback on, you know, what they thought of the person, as, you know, a fit for our group. And we certainly have had prospective students visit who our guys say, hey, I'm not sure this is a great fit. And so we kind of back off and vice versa. I think they'll fit in great. And it's just one of the ways we try to kind of manage our group and try to be mindful of what's important to our culture.
How many guys typically do you bring in during a recruiting season that come and make a campus visit?
It fluctuates based on the year and how many spots we're looking to fill. We really try to manage our roster. And so if I'm talking about, you know, non-COVID times, we roughly bring in 3 or 4 players per year and graduate 3 or 4, which gives us a roster size around 15 or 16 guys. And so, you know, in a typical year, the recruiting process has got so escalated and bumped up time wise that, you know, we're making most of our commitments early decision or earlier. And so the number, the quantity of campus visits has decreased because we typically are having a handful of significant recruiting visits early in the fall of a prospective student's rising senior year. And then they're making a commitment. And so, you know, the number's hard to pinpoint exactly. I'd say 10 to 15. Kind of each cycle. But you know, that we're recruiting a lot more to kind of put in the top of that funnel, so to speak, and kind of filter down to get to the right group.
When you have these guys on campus, now you have your roster and you're thinking about right now. So we're here in the spring, season just ended within the last month. What's the process now for preparing for the next season? You talked a little bit about kind of what you're doing individually with the players that have your meetings and talk about, hey, here's what you need to work on. What are you guys doing as a staff right now in April to prepare for next fall and your season?
Fortunately, we made the NCAA tournament again this year. And so our season went a little bit longer. And then the guys are on spring break and have a couple weeks away. And then we kind of dive into postseason meetings and, you know, talk to each player individually. And they identify, you know, things they thought they did well, things they wanted to work on, both individually and give feedback on our team and our program. And then we kind of move forward from there with areas of improvement and how they're going to work on them. And, so that's what our current players are doing. As a coaching staff, we're, you know, really, hitting the ground running on, juniors rising seniors. So this is when we really start to engage prospective recruits for the next cycle that are going to be rising seniors here. And so we're mapping out, you know, summer plans, both from a recruiting standpoint, from a camp standpoint. But then when it comes to our program and our team, we're trying to talk shop and just as a coaching staff start to hash out who are going to be our key contributors, you know, what's the makeup of our team, what changes we need to make structurally to how we're playing. I'm a big believer in trying to just identify your team's strengths and doing everything you possibly can to play to those strengths year in and year out. So I do think because I've had such a varied background, you know, we have a lot of confidence that we can kind of play some different styles and do some different things successfully and teach some different things well. That we do really, change how we play quite a bit year to year. That doesn't mean that there's not a great kind of skeleton and backbone and to how we operate as a program, and some things are never going to change. But kind of the tweaking on the extremities is kind of, I think, what's helped us maintain our success. And that's a lot of the focus of our conversation right now. We're graduating a lot, and we're going to be a much different team next year. And so how do we put those pieces together most successfully and to benefit them and put our players in positions to succeed moving forward? And that's going to be an ongoing conversation from now through the fall to, you know, even the first several weeks of practice when we spend more time on the court with our guys. But that's a lot of the legwork that's going on at this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. I would think that would have to be a lot of fun to be able to look and analyze and figure out, okay, what do we have? What did we do last year? What do we need to do moving forward? Our personnel is changing, so how do we adapt to that? I think putting together that puzzle as you go from the end of one season to the beginning of the next season has got to be one of the most exciting parts of being a coach, is just being able to dive into all that stuff and figure out how you can maximize your players, which ultimately I think as a coach, that's your goal, is to get the most out of each individual player, which conversely allows you to get the most out of your team. We're coming up towards our time deadline here, Luke, so I want to give you a chance to answer one final question. It's a two-parter. Part one is, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then part two, when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
Yeah, our biggest challenge is honestly the same year to year. It's trying to help our student athletes succeed at the highest level in all their pursuits while trying to get our group collectively to climb the mountain. And what we do as a profession is kind of crazy. It's this cyclic annual kind of tradition where we're trying to build momentum and climb the mountain as a group. And, you know, our goal for next year's team is to reach our potential come the end of the year and be playing our best basketball and kind of leaving it on the floor, knowing that we did everything we could to be the best team we could be. And so that's an ongoing challenge year in and year out. And as you just referenced, that's a huge part of the joy too, is, you know, just that the X and O's tweaking, the kind of tinkering with our team and our players to reach that pinnacle as a group. And so my annual joy, the joy that I take most in coaching, we've referenced repeatedly during our conversation here. It's just, you know, helping our student athletes have a very positive experience during their career on campus, and then watching kind of what that foundation is able to help them achieve both professionally and personally post-college. And I listen to some of your other podcasts and just, you know, hear coaches talk about the relationships they have with their players and watching them become doctors or have different successes in life. And so that's really where the reward is just seeing what they're able to accomplish both as a person, as a professional, and then hear them reference kind of how impactful their experience at the University of Rochester in our program was to them and helped them succeed at that level. So that's really where I take the most enjoyment, is just kind of seeing the reward pay off.
Yeah, there's nothing better than that, being able to have an impact and use the game of basketball, which we all love, to be able to do that. I think there's nothing better than that. Before we wrap up, Luke, I want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you, connect with your program. So if you want to share social media, email, website, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Yeah, we're on the website, uofrathletics.com. UR Men's Hoops is pretty much our handle on all social media. Just would love you to kind of engage and follow. And we're very kind of engaged in this process and happy to be a resource for anybody who's needs help with the college process or is looking to improve in the basketball realm. Feel free to reach out, and we'll do whatever we can to help.
Perfect. Luke, can I thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule this morning to jump on with us? And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio,
that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your coaching portfolio guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.